Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Don Turner has represented the town of Milton in the Vermont House since 2006. He's been the House Minority Leader since 2011. He's also the town manager for Milton, a job he took on in 2017 with the acknowledgement that he wouldn't run for re-election this year in order to focus on municipal affairs. He did step down as Milton Fire and Rescue Chief in January, but is still a volunteer on the squad. He also either is or has been a realtor with Century 21 and a housing developer with Don Turner Construction, a company owned by his father. And he's still affiliated with both those companies, although not on a day-to-day basis. But the man who seems to do everything in Milton has decided to set his sights on statewide office now. He's the Republican nominee for Lieutenant Governor. Don Turner joins us now to kick off Vermont Edition's series of interviews with major party candidates running for statewide and federal office. Representative Turner, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on today, Jane.
You say on your campaign website the number one issue facing Vermonters is affordability and economic growth. And you list a number of examples where you say that Vermonters are overburdened or are seeing unsustainable increases in the cost of living. Childcare, housing utilities, higher education, healthcare, taxes, and fees. Is there an overarching approach that you think gets at all of those issues together that you have as sort of a policy philosophy?
Yeah, I think, Jane, my experience, you listed some of my jobs, and I'm very fortunate to have that experience. And I think that that experience, you know, living and working and raising a family in a community, and then my experience traveling around the state this last summer, it has just driven home that issue. I mean, I understand this election is about what it costs in living in this state. And I believe that the experience that I bring with people helping them buy their houses or people that have come into the town offices who can't pay their taxes, who can't pay their utility bills, I get that. I understand that they're being overburdened and that these issues are driving people out of the state and making it more and more difficult for people to live in the state. And I find that people are working harder and harder each week and bringing home less. And that's can't continue.
So given all of that, as Lieutenant Governor, which is a position with limited powers, what would you do?
So I again, will rely on my experience, Jane. I've dealt with crisis, you know, as a fire and rescue chief, that are life and death. And I've served as a minority leader where I've had to work together. My entire tenure has been in the minority. I've had to build coalitions. I've had to go to work every day understanding that what my constituents may want or what I may want to do is not likely to happen. So I've got to work with the majorities and the people to make the best I can out of that. And I think in the lieutenant governor's office, I know that the lieutenant governor is not part of the legislature. So we want to make sure the listeners understand that. But what it is a place, it's an opportunity for that position to interact regularly with legislators, with senators, with constituents across all parties and party lines. So I think I can bring my experience to that and bring it into that office and open that office up so it's open to everyone. And that interaction with senators, trying to build coalitions, trying to build the bridges, but bringing the reality of what's happening in Vermont into that office, into the legislature, I think is critically important at this time for Vermont.
Contrast that with what you see the current lieutenant governor, David Zuckerman, who's also running for re-election, mm-hmm. doing. Because, I mean, that's what every lieutenant governor candidate says in a way. So
sure.
How would you be different?
Well, I think I've seen in the last 2 years a very partisan lieutenant governor's office, very focused on ideology, not reality. You know, I'm a realist. I'm not an ideology person at all. You know, I didn't even get into politics. I didn't even know what party I was until 2006 when I was asked to interview for a position. And today I still take that philosophy. I'm not about the ideology.
Interview for what position?
When I was first brought to Montpelier, I was appointed. My predecessor was deployed to Iraq. I got a call. My name had been submitted. I got a call from the governor's office and actually interviewed for the position. The governor asked, are you a Republican? And I said, I don't know. You know, I've not been active in party politics. I vote for the person I like, and the issue that's important to, you know, our community is what I've always voted on. I've tried to take that same philosophy to the state house. I've voted against my caucus as the leader. I will, as long as I informed them ahead of time, they respected that I was not going to vote party line every time.
Give us an example.
I will give you an example. This year, my former majority leader, Sarah Copenhanzas, and I co-sponsored a bill on sexual harassment. It was very important to me. I think it, you know, there were some holes in our law. I think it was important that we work together on this in a nonpartisan manner. And me as the leader helping carry that through, and it did pass, and it made it through the entire legislature. So I'm very proud of times where I've gone against the party position, but done what's right for Vermont. And there's an example that I like to bring up. I mean, this is one, and it happened this year because I can remember it. There have been numbers of times over the years that I didn't go along with the caucus, but I informed the caucus. Even as the leader, it's important to make sure everybody understands what's going on and why I feel the way I do. I'm a public safety guy. I'm a public health guy. Many people in our caucus were anti-vaccine and so on. I couldn't be. I'm pro-public health. So those are cases where I want your listeners and Vermonters to understand I'm not just a party guy. I voted what I think is right for Vermont as a whole, and that's what I'll continue to bring to this office. Not an ideology that government can be everything to everybody forever. That's not the way I believe.
As you pointed out, and you know, as is clear from the position of lieutenant governor, you're not in the legislature once you're the lieutenant governor. So actual crafting of policy is not really the lieutenant governor's job. But I want to ask you, going back to that question of affordability, you have praised Governor Scott for holding the line on taxes. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how you see, you know, you put all of these topics together in unsustainable costs and overburdening, childcare, housing, utilities, higher ed, healthcare, taxes, and fees. And, you know, in praising Governor Scott for holding the line on taxes or trying to lower them, I'm curious how you see the balance then with things like child care costs and health care costs, which I think many Vermonters would agree are totally unsustainable. But also for the very, very lowest income Vermonters, they're paying very little in taxes already, but they're also getting subsidies for childcare and health care, and yet it's still unsustainable. So what's the balance of taxes in terms of safety net programs for Vermonters, and how lowering taxes you think could actually help all Vermonters in things like health care and childcare costs?
Well, I think that the answer, Jane, is multifold for sure. And, you know, government, state government is very complex. But what we've done in Vermont is I think we have overregulated many different aspects of our lives. And we saw that in childcare, where we essentially put this very overburdening regulation on all childcare centers and seeing many of them close, the in-home daycares and stuff closed throughout the state. All of a sudden, there's a shortage of childcare facilities, and people are paying almost as much as they can make going to work. So again, that's the burdensome overregulation that I talk about and balancing that. There's a lot of that I see in many aspects. Housing, I mean, Act 250 is an area that I'm a developer. I'm pro Act 250, believe it or not. I think it's helped make our state the state it is today. It's beautiful. But there are 10 criteria in there that have been expanded to a point where nobody knows when you start that process if you're ever going to get a permit. So people going into it are risking millions to try to do it. Homeowners are paying for it on the back end, and that's why housing is not affordable. So it goes back to this overregulation. We also have many efficiencies, I believe, within state government that we can find. I'll give you an example in Milton. I became the town manager. One of the things I wanted to do for our new staff was say, what does the town own and what's our liability? We shopped out our insurance policies, number one, to educate our staff on what the town really was and what its liability is. We saved $123,000 for the taxpayers of Milton just by doing that one deal. And it was not something that should have been overlooked in the past. Why were we not shopping our insurance policies like every homeowner does, every car owner, every private business? That's the kind of experience that I'll bring to that office.
If you are elected lieutenant governor, will you still be Milton town manager?
My plan is yes. You know, lieutenant governor's position is a part-time position. It's in line with the hours of the legislature because the lieutenant governor presides over the Senate. You know, there's a full-time staff member in the lieutenant governor's office. My role as the minority leader the last 7 years, I've had no staff. It's me. and my assistants, Brian Savage and Patty McCoy and them. We have 52 members. We have to disseminate information amongst all of them. We have to meet with them. We have to regularly. It's a very big job. I've been able to manage that while I was town manager. To be honest with you, Jane, I was the fire chief, the rescue chief, the town manager, the town forest fire warden, the town rep, and the minority leader for the last 17 months.
Why?
Why? Because I care deeply about Milton. I wanted to make sure that we worked our way through these challenges in Milton as far as bringing the right staff in place. There were certain areas, fire and rescue, we had the people in place. We just worked through and managing, making sure the transition was smooth. People were already there. I have an immense amount of support in my community from people that serve on these departments, that serve with me, that now work for me, and that have allowed me to do the jobs that I've been able to do. Without the support I've had locally and all the people doing all the things they do to make sure Don Turner can do what he's doing, I could not have done all of that, starting at home with my wife and family and so on.
You have kids?
I do. I have three daughters. I'm very proud of them. I'm fortunate. All three of them still live in Vermont. One's a 20. Our oldest daughter is a nurse in the OR in Burlington. Our middle daughter is an ultrasound tech in the medical field at Burlington. And our youngest daughter works in state government. So we're fortunate in that. But they've always been very supportive. And they believe in me. I believe that I can manage it. And I've said to people in Milton, and I've said to the select board, we will, if I get elected, which is a big lift. I mean, beating an incumbent in Vermont is a challenge. I'm not thinking that I'm a shoo-in. I'm not. I'm the underdog. I know it. I will work really hard. I will not be outworked, but I might get beat. That's the way it works. But if I am elected, and I want to be elected because I think I can make a difference for Vermont, I'm going to reevaluate, okay, what is my role? How many hours is in Montpelier? What am I doing? Is it going to be doable? Not. The select board and I have already worked through all those I've already said, we'll just renegotiate my contract. We'll do whatever. It'll be up to them once I'm elected. I'm very confident with the staff that I have in Milton and with the role that I'll have in Montpelier that I can do it because I will not be the town rep. I will not be the minority leader. I am not the fire chief. I'm not the rescue chief. I will not be the forest fire warden after next March.
So only 12-hour days then.
I'll just have a few 12-hour days. But it's, you know, it's incredibly humbling to have the amount of support I've had and to serve this town of Milton and to serve in the state. You know, every day I walked into the State House, it was a true honor to represent my community. And, you know, I was going to leave my seat anyway because I had said, you know, I wanted to leave when I was respected by my colleagues and I had the same respect. And serving in the minority for 13 years, it's trying. It's challenging. But I say I walk away today with that. And that's what I was trying to achieve when I made that decision.
The likelihood is, as lieutenant governor, you'd still be in the minority.
Yes. It's very challenging. But I do know, even with the makeup of the Senate that was in existence this last biennium, I have working relationships with all those people. Not all, most of those people. Over the years, as a minority leader, I would have to work with senators to work to make bills better or not, because minority, we can't change much. Once it came to the floor of the House, our caucus members did a lot of work in the committees, and we worked with leadership to do that. But it got to a point where the majority said, this is the way it's going to be. I knew it was done. Now I got to go to the Senate. So I worked with senators over these years, and I have a great relationship with many of them as well.
You know, you told the Milton Independent something that I thought was pretty interesting, that as lieutenant governor, one of the things that you would do is use your position as a member of the Committee on Committees to shape who gets appointed to the important committees that do the work mm-hmm. of the state. And I'd like to know a little bit more about that, because in some ways it seems like it could be exercising a lot of pressure, even though you're not on the legislature anymore, on what the legislative body does by working to, as you call it, appoint more moderates to the important committees.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've tried to do in this role as a minority leader is bring balance in the legislature. You know, we had a super minority when I first became leader, and fortunately I was able to help, you know, with the team get 8 more people elected, and we were able to sustain the governor. So I understand how important balance is, Jane. And what I was referring to in that comment was, as a member of the Committee on Committees, all of that committee now has changed because I'm a much more moderate moderate perspective than the committee exists today. Today you have the progressive President Pro Tem Tim Ash, You have the progressive lieutenant governor, Dave Zuckerman, and then you had a more moderate Democrat in Dean of the Senate, Dick Mazza. If I were to be elected, all of a sudden you have two more moderate people that are not maybe ideologist, but more realistic approach, and I would work to make sure that people appointed to committee chairs would have that same perspective. It's not about what I believe, but it's about what's best for Vermont.
Could that be seen, though, as in some way sort of subverting the will of the voters if you were to have in the legislature, a supermajority of Democrats and you're looking at sort of a more liberal-leaning legislative body and you're trying to appoint moderates who maybe don't represent the majority of the legislators, is that leaning too heavily?
I don't think so, Jane. I would not think that would be. I think that people, when they go to vote, put checks and balances in place. I think they've done that historically. They put – I mean, this last biennium by electing Governor Scott, they put a check and balance in. I think with an election of myself and Governor Scott, that's just a check and balance. There is a potential that could be a supermajority again in the legislature like there was 6 years ago. So I would ask voters to put this second check in place, that I could be supporting the governor and what he's doing, and I could be tasked with certain jobs that he may want. But in regard to this committee on committees, I think it's incredibly important to have a more moderate or balanced view. It doesn't mean it's going to change, because remember, there are still two senators. So the two senators could do whatever they want. It's one vote. It's not a majority vote.
You are not in lockstep with Governor Scott, but you have supported a lot of the measures that he's worked to put in place and a lot of the positions he holds. Have you reached out to Christine Hultquist, the Democrat running against Governor Scott? Do you think you could work with her?
I have not reached out to Christine, but I think I could. I mean, I've proven that I can work across party lines. I haven't reached out because, to be honest with you, there's not a lot of time left in the day by the time you get done work and travel at night, and then the weekends are gone all weekend. But that's a good point. I definitely will plan to do that. I haven't done that yet. I think it's a good idea. And you're right, Jane. We, the governor, I would say our friends, colleagues, we've worked together closely for the last 7 years. My tenure as leader, he was the lieutenant governor, and then when he became governor. So we work closely together. But as you pointed out, there are a number of significant issues that we did not agree. And I will tell your listeners that I will represent what I think is best for Vermont. It doesn't necessarily always going to be in line with what the governor is or what the legislature is. It's what I think is – they think is – they want me to represent, and that's what I'll do.
Can we talk about gun control legislation?
Sure.
Because that's an area where I think you and the governor have had some differences of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There are now several new firearms-related laws that are mm-hmm. in place in Vermont, including some laws that allow it to be a little bit easier for law enforcement or first responders to remove guns from dangerous situations or from people who are considered a serious risk. And then there are also some restrictions under S-55, which raise the legal age to buy a gun from 18 to 21 with some exceptions, increased mandatory background checks, banned bump stocks and high-capacity magazines. Now that those laws have been in place for several months, what are your feelings on them?
I supported most of those bills that you referred to, Jane. I voted for the domestic abuse, the mental health cases and mental health and so on. And I proudly supported the $5 million in additional funding for school safety. I voted to ban bump stocks. I couldn't support the magazine ban, and I didn't support the raising of the age. I just think that, Vermont is a pretty safe state. We have a big heritage of hunters and fishers and sportsmen and shooting clubs and so on. And in my community, it was very clear that they were not in favor of this.
Even with the exception that if you're active military or if you take a hunter safety course, you can get a firearm at 18?
Yeah, I think we had a public hearing. I actually had a public hearing in Milton, which I hadn't done really much of in my tenure, but I had a public hearing. And the people that turned out, there were probably maybe 100 or so. And everyone in the room except for the three high school students were opposed to any of this stuff. So, I explained to them, I had written about it in week after week after week in my legislative report to my constituents, telling them that where I was and I was going to support some of the stuff. And I think it went really well. But what I did, the biggest thing I think I did, Jane, that makes the most impact, I heard all the people in the room. But those three teenagers, they had an impact on me. They really did have an impact on me. The next day, I went back to the town offices. I called the police chief and I said, I want us to put our patrol officers at every drop-off in the morning and pick up at school every day for the rest of the school year. We did that. The school was very pleased about it. The students felt like they were being looked at, they were safe, and the parents. And the unique and the really cool thing that happened, to be honest with you, was the relationship between the community and the police department was overall improved as a result of that. Those kids felt – they know they were heard because what I did – or what – I say I. It was me, the police chief, the school. We put it – we made it happen. It didn't cost our taxpayers any more money because they were already on patrol. So I believe that there's some good things that happen in the gun control issues and the gun bans and so on. But there was some things I just couldn't support as a result of what my district was and what I truly believe.
Let's go to David calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask the candidate if he supported the State Board of Ed forcing mergers of school districts on communities that had voted overwhelmingly against merger and had developed viable alternative proposals.
So I want to be, you know, I want to be open. I voted. So I think the caller, David, is referring to Act 46. That was one of those bills that I worked as leader and compromised, and we did. I did support that. I did support that. You know, Milton is a big school district. It was there. The Act 46 that I voted for had cost containment. We had caps on growth and spending. That's one of the reasons I supported it. There has been over the year, the last few years, many positives as a result of Act 46. But I can tell you today, I didn't realize the impact of the negative impact of these forced closures that we're dealing with today.
And just to remind people, this is because one of the provisions in Act 46 was there were several years where communities could voluntarily initiate district mergers. And then at the end of those couple of years, communities that have not made any progress on that have to submit a plan that either says, this is why we cannot merge, here's our proposal for merging, or they will be told by the State Board of Education, here's our plan for you. Right. And that's the stage we're in.
That's
now.
Right. And what I didn't know, and it's like every bill you vote on in the legislature, there's good and bad. And there's been some good stuff, but this is bad stuff that's happening now. And I want to give an example, Jane. I had a meeting up in Enosburg with the Franklin School community. 2 years ago, they received awards for having great student outcomes, and their cost per pupil was 10% less than their neighboring districts. They're now going to be forced to merge with them, losing control of the school district that has been very successful, and I'm very disappointed in that. I actually encourage them to work, and they put a plan together, but I encourage them to go to the Board of Education, and if they have to, go to court, because you have to protect that district. It's something I knew nothing about when I voted. But it did do – Act 46 was okay for Milton, but it had the cost containment piece that was going to limit the growth in spending. That's why I supported it. But I fully do – I am opposed to these forced mergers here at the end, and I hope that we can stop them, let the legislature take it from here and move forward.
Why didn't you know? I mean, it was clear when Act 46 passed that this was coming.
Well, I'm not saying that some of the forced mergers shouldn't happen. I'm just saying that – I don't think anybody – I'm going to speak for myself. I did not know the full impact of these, okay? And I could tell you, with a complex bill as Act 46, it was – you unless you looked at district by district by district, which you couldn't possibly do, knowing how it was all going to play out and who was going to merge with who and what, you had to look at your own school district, and that's what I did. I focused on what school district I represented. It was a big school district, and that bill, as it went through the process, turned into the big school districts against the little school districts. And it wasn't partisan, wasn't anything, but we all sort of did the same thing. We looked at our school district, what's the impact? And that's how I voted.
While we're on education, let's go to Kent in South Hero. Hi, Kent. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Jane, for taking my call. I'd like to add a counterpoint to the last caller's comment. I live in South Hero, and our town is slowly dying. Student enrollment has been declining continuously over the last 20 years. Education spending per pupil and the education budget continues to increase. And property taxes have reached the point where in our community, some elders can no longer afford to stay in their home, and young families can't afford to move into the area because they can't afford the property taxes and the home prices. And South Hero has refused to consolidate with nearby Grand Isle and North Hero for a rather parochial reason. And so I would ask Mr. Turner how he would propose to address a situation like that. Thank you.
Thanks, Kent. Don Turner?
Well, I think that, you know, in education, one size doesn't fit all. And I think we all know that. I think that Act 46 that does work and has worked needs to be really coupled with local input. And I think what you're going to – your voters are going to have to come to the realization someday that it's not working. And that's what I hear you saying. But I'm hearing the cost on taxes all around the state people can't afford. So I think that's not new. But I think I want to see local districts, local communities have some say because, as I said, one size doesn't fit all. But I also want us to be supportive of school choice and more independent schools. I think we have to get creative in Vermont, and we can't just say, well, we're going to control everything from Montpelier. That's not who I am. That's not what I believe. I know schools are the heart and souls of their communities. We got to have them have say in it, but we got to also include school choice, independent schools, and having the state board work with the districts moving forward.
You know, it's interesting. If you take what Kent says from Kent's perspective here on we need to have a merger here because this is strangling our community versus, you know, what you were talking about up in the kingdom, you know, this idea that this isn't going to work. We don't want a forced merger. We don't need it. Our school is good as it is, and this is going well for our community. I don't know how you do both of those things within the confines of a law that affects the state.
And that's the challenge, Jane. I think that we face that on all these critical, real emotional issues in the State House. Where's the balance? And again, I think as a Vermonter, fourth generation Vermonter, lifelong resident, I don't want to take the control out of the hands of my friends and neighbors in Milton. But I think there is a point where you have to kind of walk that line, get to a point where there has to be a decision and it has to be for the greater good. And I don't know where that is, but it's a lot more work that needs to be done. And as long as I've been there, we've been talking about education. Education, the funding formula needs to be changed. And that's the tax issue that I think Kent was talking about. It's broken. We need to fix it. We need to reconnect voters with their decisions on school spending. And I think that will help in aiding communities to make those decisions going forward.
Because we want to touch on a number of different topics, I'll move on because we could do a whole show with you about that.
Yes,
and have done many of them. So you didn't support the legalization of marijuana, but I think you said that if legalization was going to move forward, you would prefer to see a tax and regulate framework of commercial sales. That obviously didn't happen this go around, but is likely to be considered come January. So if you're elected lieutenant governor, is that an issue that you'll apply some influence on or try to?
You know, I think, Jane, you're absolutely correct. I worked on that. It's an area that, again, the caucus was opposed and I was looking at. I have firmly opposed recreational use of marijuana. I'm, as you said earlier, a public safety guy. I've seen far too many accidents where people are under the influence of whatever it is. When I'm out there helping them or removing them from a vehicle or a family member, somebody's perished, it doesn't matter if it's marijuana or drugs or alcohol. It doesn't matter. They're there. We got to help them. So I was adamantly opposed to it. But once it was going to become legal, the reality, the realist in me said, wait a minute. If it's going to be legal, there's going to be burdens on our education system, on our public health, and our public safety system. So I went to work to try to figure out a path to tax and regulate. And I know it's not a popular thing for some people, but as a Republican, it wasn't that very. I wasn't that popular, but the reality is, we couldn't stop it. We did everything we could to prevent it from being legal. Now it was going to be legal. Now let's try to raise the resources we need to support these other things: prevention, education, enforcement. I am very concerned about it. I still have great concern about that. I don't want to see us be Colorado. I think we're seeing a lot of impacts. I wish it was a little bit more time so we could look at it from a few, you know, several years versus a year or two. But if we're going to have a regulated marketplace, you know, we need to make sure that there's safety standards and it has to provide the enforcement revenue for enforcement and prevention. That's where I'm at.
And is that an issue that you care strongly enough about to try to work on as lieutenant governor? Because part of the role is you sort of get to pick which issues you really want to focus on and have an influence on.
I would work hard on the public safety, public health, and public education piece. As far as how it works or the logistics and mechanics of it, I don't think I would spend a lot of effort on that. But I almost believe in a system like liquor, where there's just a few dispensaries or a few, you know, state managed, where they're, it's very regulated, it's very controlled, and people know what kind of product they're getting.
You've mentioned that you are an emergency responder and have been. You're a longtime member of the Milton Fire and Rescue, and you were chief for, I think, about a decade, right? And
yeah.
And on Vermont Edition recently, we talked about the shortage of EMTs. Volunteer fire departments are also struggling to recruit new members, to retain members, to have enough people to respond to emergencies when emergencies happen. And I understand this is something that you'd like to address as Lieutenant Governor.
It absolutely is, Jane. I joined Milton Fire when I was 17. It's been my life, my family, you know, the whole thing. I was the chief from 2004 to 2018. I just got done in January. I took over the rescue department in 2008, and so I was the chief of both separate departments, 106 volunteers from 2008 to 2018. This is a very serious issue, and I would say a crisis. I think Vermont's facing a crisis in this area. When I was up in the Northeast Kingdom and I learned that they're actually closing stations, it really was really concerning to me. One of the things I talked about when I first started this campaign was, how are we going to help departments recruit and retain people? And one of the things that the State Fire Division of Fire Safety is doing is looking at ways to reduce the amount of hours it takes to just get on the fire ground or get in the fire service. That's one way that will help. But we've got to come up with something else. I mean, we've got to find a way to help departments recruit and then retain those people. And I look at, there are 35 other states that have programs, state managed, that help these departments do that. We're going to have to do that if we're going to preserve volunteers in Vermont. The other thing is, Maine is just in the process of adopting a voluntary program where there's a contribution to the member, such as a tax credit or something, when they serve on a department for an amount of time. So those are all things that I'm going to really focus some energy. If I'm elected, that is a primary issue that I will be looking at, because I can't think of anything worse that would happen than you or me or a family member needing a service, calling 911, and nobody's there to respond. I just can't. I mean, for me, my whole life has been about that. Day, night, didn't matter when people call, I went to help, just like my fellow firefighters and EMTs around the state do. But I can't imagine if somebody called and we couldn't help. Nobody was there to answer the call. So that's a primary issue for me, and I feel it's sort of a crisis.
Let's take another call here from Cecile in the time we have left. Cecile's calling in from Cabot. Hi there. Go right ahead.
Hi. I'm calling because several times you've characterized the progressive stand as idealistic and your stand as realistic. I kind of see it the other way, but I'd like you to get really specific and clarify, what exactly do you mean by that? What do you think is idealistic? And, for example, raising average wages of working Vermonters. Thank you.
Cecile, thanks for the call. Don Turner?
Yeah, thank you very much, Cecile. I appreciate the call as well. When I say realistic, I am referring to what people are telling me on the ground versus a vision that people need to make a higher minimum wage, for example. And I hear people that can't afford to live in the state. They can't afford to pay for the gas to get back and forth to work, or the food or the utilities. So when I say realistic, it's what I'm hearing on the ground. It's not my vision that that's what's happening. I don't believe in bigger government and that government should take care of everybody forever. And I want to focus, if I'm elected, on these things such as what it costs to live here. Raising the minimum wage is an example. Cecile didn't bring it up, but I want to bring it up. I think if we raise the minimum wage, which is on the table, it's going to hurt more people than it's going to help. And the reason I believe that is I know that many of the people who live in this state are senior citizens. They live on a fixed income. They don't get any benefit from a higher pay wage or anything like that. They live on a fixed income. All they're going to have is the Social Security that they get at the end of the month, and everything else is going to go up for the people that make $15 an hour. So to me, that's an example of what a ideology is versus the reality of the impact of it. So that's how I would answer that question.
Well, we'll leave it there on a concrete example of what you see as your perspective there. That's Don Turner, who's represented the town of Milton in the Vermont House since 2006 and been House Minority Leader since 2011. He is running now for your vote as Lieutenant Governor on the Republican ticket. Don Turner, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Jane. I really appreciate it.
And you can listen this Friday for an interview with David Zuckerman, the incumbent Lieutenant Governor who's running as a Democrat progressive and trying to retain his position. We'll be doing interviews with candidates all season long running up to the general election in November.